You're listening to C101.5 FM, The Hawk, from Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario. Hamilton's alternative.
Good evening. You are listening to Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen, with your host, Lila Miklosh, on 101.5 FM The Hawk. Tonight's special guest is Hamilton theater artist Radha Menon, the artistic director of Red Betty Theater, and this year's recipient of the City of Hamilton's Arts Innovation Award. We are going to take a deep dive into the theater art scene in Hamilton for BIPOC theater artists. And our featured album is the original Broadway cast recording of On Your Feet, a musical based on the life and music of Gloria Estefan. You just heard The Rhythm Is Gonna Get Ya. Next up from the cast recording, Conga.
Come on, check your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, check your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer.
If you want to do the conga, This is CIOI 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
I'm Lila Miklosh, and this is Center Stage on 101.5 FM, The Hawk. Our special guest on tonight's episode is Radha Menon. As an introduction, Joel Levy wrote a lovely piece about our guest for the Toronto Guardian. Here is what he had to say. Radha Menon is many things, and an award-winning playwright, filmmaker, designer, performer, and arts educator. In all these roles, she frequently pushes the boundaries of what can be done, translating her relentless energy for creation into mesmerizing and daring works of art that tackle difficult subjects like the subjugation of women, patriarchy, racism, belonging, identity, and animal rights. Her range is wide, her output prolific. Radha began her career in British theater and television and had a music publishing contract in her early 20s. Shying away from the limelight, she launched into a playwriting career that has produced 7 full-length plays and 7 short plays. Menon has had her work performed across North America and the UK. She established Red Betty Theatre in 2011 to present the perspectives and distinct experiences of Canadian women of color to broader and more diverse audiences and increase access to these performances to contribute to the richness and diversity of Canadian theater.
You're listening to Center Stage, a celebration of musicals from both the stage and screen. I'm your host, Lila Miklosh, and on the line with me right now is the artistic director of Red Betty Theater, Radha Menon. Hello, Radha.
Hi, Lila. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. You just had a show that was a part of the Fringe Festival's online festival that just finished up called Blackberry. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Well, it was pretty incredible. Funnily enough, I had submitted to the lottery and hadn't got in anyway. But because Fringe had changed and adapted to COVID, they decided to have a certain little enterprise called Skip the Glitches, where shows went from venue to venue. But the venue were people's front gardens. Blackberry was one of those shows. We put up a 20-minute live play that rehearsed in my garden. Social distancing, and we did all the protocol, hand sanitizing, temperatures taken. It was something else. And then first show was recorded and is streaming. So now the show is available to be streamed. So you can go to Hamilton Fringe and watch Blackberry still.
And it was very fun to watch it because as I'm watching your 3 young performers in the play, the one that I saw that was pre-taped, you know, there's people walking their dogs, cars driving by. But it worked. It still worked. It had that energy of a live performance coming from your performers. And I do have to say, I was really impressed because when I went to go look at the bios of the performers, they were very young, high school students. Yes. Where did you find this amazing talent for your play?
They are all teenagers and they were incredible. I have to take my hat off to Jenny Esdale and her team. I've worked there too, but not recently. The 2 young lads that were in the show, Jason and Gizzy, so that we had 3 performers, Molly March, Jason Chung, and Gizzy Mohammed. And the 3 of them were students at the Theatre Aquarius Wentworth Education Centre they have there. They came out of there, so Jenny cast it. The play was actually set in Birmingham and just adapted it regionally, basically, because it was much easier than trying to get anybody. Well, there's no point trying to make Birmingham here, especially for Fringe.
What we saw in the Fringe was just a 20-minute scene from the play, but your plan is to have the full production next year. What's that going to look like?
Ideally, it's going to be a site-specific piece, which means we should be able to do it outside because it is set in the open. It'll be set by a river or a lake. I think that would be the best plan of action, especially since we don't know what's going to happen with COVID. Theater production as it is very difficult with all the overheads. It would be difficult for, I mean, we're losing venues left, right, and center. But that's another conversation. We need to be able to make ends meet, sell enough tickets, put bums in seats, but indoor venues, they may have restrictions for quite a long time in terms of how many people can sit in inside one house at a time. I mean, you're losing money, and it might not be feasible for theatre. Theatre has to kind of reinvent itself. So I think this particular play really lends itself to this.
Now, when I was reading the notes from the program, the subject matter of the play was based on experiences from your own life. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about the inspiration for Blackberry?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've had quite an eventful life. But anyway, when I lived in England, I returned to Birmingham at age 16. I was transplanted into Small Heath, which is an industrial Birmingham itself. So I kind of laugh because I live in Hamilton. Hamilton is the Birmingham of Canada, Ontario. So I moved from one industrial city to another via Toronto and Saskatchewan. When I lived there as a teenager, it was a very marginalized inner city kind of ghetto. It was all people of color, predominantly Pakistani Muslims and some Afro-Caribbean ancestry, a few smattering of Indians and white people, very, very few. You could probably count them on one hand. The white people that we did see were always in positions of authority. So we would see teachers in Small Heath were white, social workers were white, and police officers were white. They were a force to be reckoned with. You didn't call the police for anything because the police were pretty much the strong arm of the National Front. We were harassed, and I was stopped personally many times, made to sit in police cars. I'm talking about when I was 16 and when I was 17. I was accused of being a sex worker. I mean, they didn't say sex worker. They threatened to arrest me. They beat people up all the time. Like, if you were a BIPOC man walking down the street, they would drag you into the back of their van. They call them paddy wagons. And then you stomp the living daylights out of the person in the van, and then they would just dump them. But a little bit like when I lived in Regina, the RCMP were doing those starlight tours. They would take Indigenous men from Regina, drive them out into the middle of nowhere. In Saskatchewan, it's very, very cold, so minus 40. They would drop them off in the middle of nowhere, and these men would freeze to death. The police were formed to catch runaway slaves and to kill Indigenous people. That's what the police services were actually formed to do. And in England, it was pretty much the same. It was to keep all undesirables in our places. Sounds strange to maybe you, Lila, and to many of your viewers, because you've never had to put yourself in this position. Not necessarily to you at all, Lila. To many people, to the average white body, when they see a policeman, it's something that they breathe a sigh of relief if they're walking down the docks. To me, it makes my hair rise, you know?
And I think more and more people are having an awareness, well, I should say more and more white people are having an awareness of the reality of BIPOC people's relationship with police, and that police are not an institution that is looked upon with loving kindness or fondly, but with fear.
With great fear. I wrote it because when I was young, I was attacked. It was hard. England was a tough place to be in the 70s and 80s and 90s. England was tough. I mean, it still is, but not to the point where how it used to be. It used to be, for example, one year, I was attacked three times in a public space. But fully grown men in daylight, twice with knives. Twice, no one intervened in any way. They just stood aside and watched me race, run around, get chased, just running for my life.
And you would have been a teenager at the time?
I was a teenager. It was at the same time. It terrified me. I was terrified. And I still am terrified. I'm still terrified. It's PTSD. When I'm in a space with white bodies, I get PTSD, especially white men. I have anxiety over interactions with people, Lila, and it just comes from, I guess, just from terrible experiences.
Definitely warranted. And I guess this leads into another conversation. You're a member of COBRA, the Coalition of Black and Racialized Artists, and this group came together because they saw a need in Hamilton to have an organization of artists coming together specifically for artists of color. So I'm just looking at their mission statement, and it says the Coalition of Black and Racialized Artists, or COBRA, is a collective of artists of color based in Hamilton, Ontario. And we have noted that artists of color are underrepresented in our artistic communities, both at grassroots and administrative levels of many artistic organizations. And we strive to offer our perspectives as Hamilton begins making strides towards a more complete understanding of the city's underserved artistic scenes. Just building off of that mission statement, what has been your experience as an artist in Hamilton who's coming from the BIPOC community?
Well, I helped write that mission statement for COBRA. We launched a few years back. It started off with a group of artists I was asked to join, and because we have found that all the exclusion that I have faced in theater myself and the lack of access to stages and to audiences is exactly reflected in other forms of art. As artists, we banded together so that we could highlight this. We had an amazing launch. We have been continuing our work with that, collecting a database of artists in Hamilton area. We've had socials. We are part of a number of organizations who put on an evening last year. It was 2 days of workshops called The Reception, and where arts organizations from all over Hamilton and beyond Hamilton, all about anti-oppressive work, equity and inclusion, and how to do outreach and so much more about tokenism and ways in which arts administrators, managers, directors can learn skills and also be able to dialogue with BIPOC artists and have access to them. And plus, there were a number of performances, including one by yours truly. It was an incredible 2 days of resources, and the majority of art leaders in Hamilton embraced this and came and witnessed Indigenous culture and artists speaking and food, incredible food. It was just a really wonderful 2 days. COBRA, we are calling to defund the police, and defunding the police means having resources in other parts of society, in the community, to help marginalized people, so that the first port of call is not the police, because the police tend to overreact when faced with a member of the public who does not reflect their direct idea of who a Canadian is.
And it's interesting that you should phrase it that way. You were part of a panel discussion hosted by Fempire called The Matriarchs. And the conversation at one point went on talking about how all these different grant bodies, whether it's the Canadian Arts Council or so on, were about uplifting works of Canadian art. And then someone said, well, coming from a BIPOC perspective, what is Canadian art and what is it we are trying to reinforce when we're talking about Canadian identity? And I know this is a big meta question. When you hear the word Canadian, does that word speak to you or no?
No, it doesn't. And what it is, these are remnants of systemic racism, remnants, the wording of what Canadian, what is Canadian, the idea of Canada, what is Canada? Can I be a Canadian? It's hard to reconcile. I have been here for 25 years in Canada, and yet I may never be considered Canadian enough to be produced on a main stage in Canada. I may never be Canadian enough to be published by a Canadian publishing company, because Canada is a colony. It is something that exists on stolen land. It cannot have any real validity in equity until that fact is acknowledged and real reconciliation is taken.
Just last night I was listening in on a discussion Desmond Cole was having, and he was talking about how when the Canada 150 anniversary came up, there was all these big arts grants for people and groups and organizations who would celebrate Canada 150 which a lot of Indigenous communities took great issue with, because just the concept that we are celebrating, what, the 150th anniversary of you being on our land and stealing it from us? Is Canada even real? What is this thing that we call Canada, and what is it exactly we are celebrating?
Exactly.
Deconstructing that.
Absolutely, and that's exactly right. But it falls upon Canadians to reconcile this with their own identity. It falls upon every Canadian themselves, because this is not something that is taught in school. This is something that is actively ignored. Canada has created a wonderful PR image of itself, but it actually does not exist. There are many different Canadas, and the one that really bothers me is that the people whose land we are all settled upon, advertently or inadvertently, are oppressed, and many still have no clean drinking water, no fresh running water, no schools, very little education, very little infrastructure, very little resources, and absolutely in a crisis of mental health and addiction. Directly thanks to Canada and colonialism.
Yes, and here in Hamilton, we have city councillors who want to spend millions of dollars on Commonwealth Games and then complain about people living in tents on the street because they have nowhere to go during a worldwide pandemic.
It's absolutely awful. We need to have leaders that care. And I mean, you heard that Fempire conversation. Leaders need to care. They need to care. In not only in the theatre community, but in all communities. To have a flourishing community, people need to care about each other. You know, not just people who look like ourselves, talk like ourselves, who walk like ourselves. For everybody, community needs to be inclusive.
And when you're imagining a leader who has empathy, what does that leader look and sound like to you?
Well, I would say a woman, for a start. I think democracy is an absolute abject failure, because it has turned into almost an exact replica of what was overturned to achieve democracy. So democracy has been sidelined and politics has got in the way, and we still have the same situation. Now, instead of having dukes and earls and the mega rich aristocracy who used to rule over all the serfs, now we have the same mega rich who just hide behind corporations. Corporations are just people, but they don't have to pay tax.
And I would say maybe it's not democracy that's the issue. I think it's gotten corrupted by capitalism, and some people can't tell the difference between the two and think they are one and the same, but they are two very, very, very different things, because capitalism is all about survival of the fittest, and whoever's got the biggest, strongest thing is going to win. It's sort of the whatever I can do to attain money and power, I will do, and I will find any way to get away with doing whatever I can to attain that money and power. And it's not about sharing, right, or taking care of other people. It's just about take, 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 right?
Well, so exactly. And I'd like to add that capitalism and colonialism go hand in hand. Colonialism only came about because the Western world wanted to plunder the rest of the world and take. So without capitalism, there was no colonialism. They do go hand in hand, and they're both two-step systems that need to be removed, because with all this idea of capitalism does is make people think that, well, they need to consume more and more. They need this. They need more money. They need this. They need that. I've got to have the newest one of this. It's that idea of inexhaustible resources, and it's that has driven us to the state we are in right now.
Well, and definitely that consumerist culture, if we really want to talk about the opium for the masses, it's that.
That and keeping everybody not thinking at all. Television, the consumption of just general stuff that makes you just zone out and all you have to do is watch it. You don't need to think. People actually turned off their phones, turned off their TVs, and had nothing other than their own thoughts. It would be great if people started thinking.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid and we'd go, I'm bored. That time that, you know, not stimulated with whatever, you just have time to imagine and think and wonder. And I find our culture now, it's like you constantly have to be stimulated with something. You can't just be.
Yeah. The consumers of everything. We consume everything and just spit it out, churn it up. But it also, we're just having a whole load of children who will have very little imagination, because all they're doing is just spewing up everything that they're just regurgitating what they're consuming on TV, on the net, and the web, and everywhere else, on their phones. And basically, it just means there's going to be some very stupid children with no imagination if you just keep feeding them a fresh diet of television.
Although I don't know if this explains the people that are currently in power. None of them are children, though they act like them. But anyhow, I digress.
Yeah.
On a happier note, though, you've had success as of late. Just recently, you won a Hamilton Arts Award. Do you want to talk to us about that?
Yes, it was actually an incredible week, because in the same week, I was the recipient of the 2020 City of Hamilton Arts Innovation Award. So that was pretty wonderful. And I also was the recipient of another award. Do you remember my play, Rukmini's Gold?
Yes, I do.
Well,
excellent play.
Yes, Rukmini's Gold won a national award in India called Fani Damanj, and it's going to be produced in 4 cities in India.
Wow.
Yeah, and they are translating it into Hindi and publishing it as well. So
that's amazing.
To it. Yeah.
Wow. So now you are an international playwriting star.
I don't think much of a star, but certainly something.
Go with it. Go
a
with
blip,
it. You are a
blip
star
on the landscape.
A blip
on the landscape. Yeah, and I also was very, very grateful to receive a call from a new initiative called The Garden Project, which is a new initiative by Porchlight Theatre and in partnership with industry. I was the first recipient of a grant to help BIPOC artists. So,
this
and that
amazing.
Happened in the same week.
Wow.
I was reeling. Now it's got to be a desert now for the next while, I'll say.
Well, and on that note, you talked earlier in the conversation about the lack of venues in Hamilton, and this was even before COVID hit. So,
yes.
So talk to us about this lack of venues in Hamilton for theater artists.
Well, we've seen venues closing little by little. I produced The Circus in 2013 at the Lyric Theater. And the Lyric Theatre is now gone, has been gone for a while. The Citadel Theatre, I did Ganga's Ganja in 2012. The Citadel is gone. We did Rise of the Prickly Pear in Artword Art Bar in 2014.
And you're gone
now too,
yeah.
Gone. We did Learning to Swim at the Pearl in 2017. And they're there, but just barely. And we did Rukmini's Gold at the Staircase Theatre, and they are going to be gone.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes, I've heard that whole corner is going to go up for sale.
Oh.
That's it.
Oh, I love that space.
I know. We've put up many shows. We did Ganga's Ganja there in 2018. We did Rukmini's Gold. We've done a lot at the Staircase Theatre, and it will be really missed as a venue. We'll really be missed. We need a black box theater.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, folk, anybody, any rich folk out there who would like to donate, go to redbettytheatre.org. We have a donate button there, and all your donations will go towards great theater. And if you are a millionaire and you drop us a lot of money, then we'll buy a building. I can always
we'll name it after you.
we will name it after you. Lila, we always have to live in hope.
Other than millionaires giving you $1 million to have a black box theater that you'll put their name on, is there any other hopes you have for the future of theater in Hamilton?
Well, I would like to have access to Theatre Aquarius spaces. I would like to have access to their resources. They've excluded me for 12 years since I've been here. I have been here for 12 years. I've had zero luck with them in terms of just even conversations. It's been awful, and I'm not the only one. Theatre Aquarius shuts out all local artists. There's a plethora of very talented artists in Hamilton who just don't get a chance to work at all in Theatre Aquarius, because it's a hotbed of nepotism and cronyism. And all you have to do is look at who directs what and what plays the guy that develops there to see that. It's a real sad state of affairs, but I would like that second space to have access to it and all the other artists here who need to develop their work and who need to have a community and an actual space. And it's paid for by city taxes, federal taxes. We fund this thing, yet it's a little club. It's a club of elitism. It excludes people by having these massive ticket prices. Theatre needs to be for the people, not for the elite. That's where it started, and that's where it should continue.
When I go to a Theatre Aquarius show, they're not catering to an audience of youth. They're not catering to an audience of BIPOC theatre.
No,
whenever I have those kind of conversations with them, and I think this came up in the interview that you and various other artists had done with CBC Hamilton, where they made it clear they had no interest in growing their audience or expanding their audience.
And they bus people in all the time.
As someone who reviews a lot of theatre to a lot of different theater companies, and I look at examples like the Shaw Festival, Stratford Festival, Cannes Stage, so on, they have models of pricing for younger audiences to get youth and get them involved and make them, you know, make this something that they want to make sure that they do and they invest in for their lifetime, right? So they're doing that investment in young people and making sure that they have an investment in theater arts for the rest of their lives. And I think Theater Aquarius lost that somewhere along the line. Any final word for aspiring BIPOC theater artists out there from you, somebody who's been working very hard at her craft and has had success, but success with a lot of hard work and struggle along the way?
I would say, if this is your passion, if you have something to say, never give up. Just never give up.
Well, thank you very much. I think that's a brilliant note to end things on.
From the top of Hamilton's escarpment, 101.5 The Hawk.
You've been asking for it all day, and here it is. The new one from Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine.
Get on your feet.
Get up and make it happen.
Get on your feet. Stand up.
You are listening to Center Stage on 101.5 FM The Hawk, and I'm your host, Lila Miklosh. If you want to stay up to date with what's happening on the show, you can always join the Center Stage with Lila Miklosh on 101.5 FM The Hawk Facebook fan page, or you can follow me on Twitter at Lila Miklosh. That's at LYLAMIKLOS. Or you can follow me on Instagram at @TheReal_LilaMiklosh. Our featured album tonight is the original Broadway cast recording of On Your Feet. In the last segment, we heard the title song along with Anything for You. Our special guest, Radha Menon's play, Blackberry, which was a part of the Hamilton Fringe Festival's online What the Fest event, is still available to watch until August the 6th. Visit hamiltonfringe.ca for tickets. And now for some more great music from the Broadway cast of On Your Feet.
When the sun is setting in the sky,
everybody knows.
No.
Mom.
Don't ask me again.
I wasn't asking.
Oh. Excuse me.
Look, she's struggling, okay? Hanging out with the wrong people, missing classes. She's gonna get herself into trouble. She needs some stability.
Is that what you are offering? Stability? I don't know what you do with your gypsy life. You're gone. That's all I know. And now you want to take Rebecca.
It could be good for her.
Is that right? Why are you talking to me? Don't talk to me about my family.
He doesn't deserve that.
He doesn't deserve you.
I'm not
my family that I sacrificed everything for.
That we sacrificed everything for. We. When you went back to school, I stayed home taking care of Daddy and Rebecca. I was 14 years old. Don't you dare not acknowledge that. Don't you dare. We are taking Rebecca on tour with us.
Do it, and I swear I will never speak to you again.
Really?
Try me.
Anyway, I'm thinking about you.
Miami Herald and a headline declaring Emilio had the world in their heads, talking about the worldwide sales.
Okay. April 19th, 1775.
The first drafts of the Revolutionary War burned and conquered Massachusetts. Hey, it's snowing. Bobby, look at the window. It's snowing.
I see, Papa. I see.
There's always something to lose when you win. Still, if those are the rules of the game,
I'm glad you're here. Come on, Papi, let's go outside for a minute, okay?
Shh, it's me. It's Mommy. I'm here. If I never got to tell you, there's no way I could be prouder of the life that you've created, all the ways that you have grown. If I never got to tell you,
you are my life,
I will say it ever louder.
From the first day you were
in my life, you've been a blessing, and I need you to know
life can change so quickly.
Don't think that you have all the time in the world to tell someone the reasons that you twist of fate. All the words in your heart, they never hear. What's the sense in waiting until it's too late to say it? Much like a game, we play it when we choose to keep it all inside. Until it's too late, forever, we run out of hope. This just might be our last goodbye.
If I never got to tell you,
if I never got to tell you
all the ways you made me happy,
that the dreams you've been fulfilling are fulfilling my dreams too.
I never got to tell you,
I love you so.
You were blind down to the
moment. If I ever hurt you,
you have always been the reason for the choices I have made. I thought I would have all the time in the world to make things right, but I almost lost tomorrow with one twist of fate. I was facing the world.
Did you see all the red roses people sent her?
Yeah.
She hates red roses. You were taking her away from me, and I couldn't bear the thought of losing her.
I know the feeling.
If I never got to tell you, I regret the way things happened. In my life, each time I trusted
was just one more time I lost. If I never got to tell you,
I understand.
You're the son I always wanted.
I will always be.
And though I didn't make it easy,
no, you didn't make it easy.
I have paid the higher cost. I thought I would have all the time in the world to make things right. But I almost lost tomorrow. With one twist of fate, I was facing the world without you. So I'm no longer waiting.
I'm no longer waiting until it's too late. It's like a game we played when we choose to keep it all inside. Until it's too late, forever we run out of all whatever's. And this just might be our last goodbye. Before it's too late.
You're listening to The Hawk, 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
I'm Lila McLoche. This is 101.5 FM The Hawk, and you are listening to Center Stage. From the Broadway cast recording of On Your Feet, we just heard You'll Be Mine, Famous, If I Never Got to Tell You, Reach, and Coming Out of the Dark. Please visit redbettytheater.org to find out when you can experience Radha Menon's play Blackberry in full and in person. As I was in the middle of recording, editing, and producing this episode of Center Stage, I heard the sad news that director Alan Parker had passed away. He had directed numerous movie musicals over his prolific film career, including Fame, Pink Floyd's The Wall, The Commitments, and Evita. But the one I will remember the most is Bugsy Malone, since the stage adaptation was the first musical I ever took part in as an alumnus of the Theatre Aquarius Summer School program. Here is You Give a Little Love, the final number, after an epic cream pie fight between rival child mobs, sung by a cast that included a very young Jodie Foster, Scott Baio, and Michael Jackson. Tune in again next week, Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. Until then, stay safe and keep well.
Could have been anything that we wanted to be, and it's not too late to change. I'd be delighted to give it some thought. Maybe you'll agree that we're really on 2, 3, 4. We could have been anything.
broadcasting across the Steel City. This is 101.5 The Hawk.